Yes, I rang one of the elders, Liam Dowling, and I told him that if Martin Skinner, Dick Lowe, Andrew Prizik, or Colin Brown, they were the elders, if one of them couldn't make it that Sunday at 3 o'clock to my home, none of them were to come. So they all came, they're all there early, and when Andrew opened the meeting with prayer, I rebuked the five of them one by one. And I demonstrated, and I have the records of their unkindness, their lies, their gossip. I'd already rebuked two of them for gossip. Particularly their hypocrisy, which I detest. And I spoke for an hour and a half, and they had all agreed they wouldn't interrupt me. And one by one, I demonstrated that their points were petty, were unchristian, and I used the scriptures to rebuke them. And particularly the one where Jesus said, what you want others to do to you, Matthew 7 verse 12, do the same thing to them. And I said, I wouldn't have done it on one of you. Because I had helped them in many ways over the years. Anyway, so it happened and I rebuked them. And that started a sordid episode for about another 3 months where they changed a letter and they had a new letter and they said that I confused independence for initiative. I ran ahead of the organization and I refused to meet with two elders. Well, the business about refusing to meet with two elders isn't true, because I had met with two elders the week with them before I left the congregation, because one of them wanted to discuss why I put the ads in without their knowledge. In fact, those ads were in for years. He was just a new elder. He knew nothing about it. But I did meet with them. And I told them the reason I didn't like meeting with two elders is that once I had been tape recorded behind my back, not realizing it. Oh yes, so now that was by elders when I was handling a court case, judicial matter. Now I just want to get back to when I phoned the two members of the governing body. When we met with Arthur Matthews and Peter Andrews in the Dublin branch, they're two members of the branch committee, and Arthur Matthews said to Martin Merriman, well, don't be too disappointed, Martin, for not meeting the governing body. He said, the entire governing body heard your tape. And Martin said, what tape? He said, when you phoned Lyman Stringle, he said, your conversation was taped. And I think Arthur may have let that slip out. So Martin said, that doesn't make me feel better, Arthur. That makes me feel worse. To think that we approached them innocently and they actually tape recorded us without our permission or knowledge, and then sent that tape over with Lloyd Barry for the Dublin branch. And those men were instructed, obviously, in a memo to check us out. Well, Martin and I were two elders. In fact, we're two of the first generation of Southern Irish elders. And I just can't imagine why they would have done such a thing to us. So, coming back now to the issue with the Clondalkin elders, and I had to, me leaving the congregation, there were other acts of cruelty and unkindness to me, which I was amazed about. So I wanted to get a branch committee, a special committee, to rebuke these men for their hypocrisy. So Fred Metcalf rang me and he said, John, we want to talk to you. I said, Fred, he's a member of the branch committee, he's a lovely brother. I said, Fred, you know I've never been once disobedient to the branch. Whatever you say, I'll do. So I feel we should be, at that point, I felt we should be obedient to our shepherds, our Christian shepherds. Not that we should believe and do anything they say. Anyway, I went over and they said, and this is the essence of their meeting, they said that if I proceeded with the special committee to rebuke these five elders, that they would feel obligated to tell the special committee where I was in the United States. Well, I was astonished and I started crying. I was very upset. And it wasn't until 2 months later that Martin Merriman's wife told my brother that I was bribed by the branch in Dublin. And in essence, that's what it is. In other words, if I proceeded to rebuke those five elders, who are very organizational men, whereas I sort of wasn't, and yet I loved the organization, that they would tell them where I was. So I was shocked, and I was glad it was over, because I went and shook all their hands, and three of them, two are away on holiday in Wales, and I was glad it was over, so I wanted to get down to the business of being a shepherd of the flock of God, as I understood it at that point. So I decided to not be an elder for a while. In fact, I decided that when I came back, that's what I mentioned to the Clondalkin elders, I wanted to have a rest. So what happened was my friend's child was having an operation, and I discovered in America that the society knew that hemophiliacs were going through gallons of blood to get the factor 8 and to a lesser extent factor 9. It's the blood clotting agent, and that there's documentation in the Brooklyn Files showing that they know brothers and sisters who are hemophiliacs are feeding off blood, but they're refusing to publish it. And that they know that there's contradictions, that since blood is a symbol of life, how can a symbol be of more value than the reality? And they know how it was adopted through Nathan Norris' presidency in July 1945, how there was a time for about something like 20 years when blood transfusions were acceptable and vaccinations were unacceptable. Now it's the reverse, etc., like transplants, etc., etc. So my friend's child, so I told him I felt we were wrong on this. Now that's all, I said, a few other things on that issue. But then my brother, Jared, his wife had a baby, and it was born with diaphragmatic hernia, and it died two days later. I took the funeral. And I said to my wife, I said, Yvonne, I'm trapped. She said, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to be disfellowshipped. She said, why? I said, well, I believe we're wrong on the blood, because I had to say it to my brother Jared, and he immediately trusted what I said, because I wouldn't have said it without a lot of study, thought, and meditation. And he went and told the hospital authorities that his child was to have blood, because they had just made it a ward of court if it needed it. But as it turned out, the child was too seriously ill, so it died. But I said to my wife in the hospital, I said, darling, I said, I'm trapped. And she said, why? I said, because, number one, I will not tell a lie on the blood I was referring to. If somebody needs help and they come to my home, I will not pass the buck to another elder. I will not refuse to help them. I will not tell lies. I said, I'm trapped. I will be disfellowshipped. They won't. There's no room to express your Christian conscience in this area. So we went on holiday to Spain a week or two after that, and we were with Cedric and Kathleen Burton. He's a circuit overseer here. Beautiful brother. And he made the point that I should just say nothing, but I said, Cedric, I can't. I said, I can't. A man must speak out, must believe, must say what he believes is true. Surely that's the right thing to do. Anyway, I got home 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later or so. We were in England as well. And I was literally not home 24 hours when the phone rang. And a brother's wife was in hospital. Her liver was malfunctioning. Her blood was clotting. She wasn't even baptized. And he asked me to go down to strengthen her. I went down with Martin. We had a look. It wasn't too serious. So I rang him. I took him to breakfast. Told him the whole story. I wanted him to decide. And not me. Since it would have made me a hypocrite. And that's something I cannot be. So I knew that I had to start speaking. So I wrote to Arthur Matthews. And I spoke to a few of my personal friends around the country. And there was immediately uproar. So I typed out a letter of resignation ready to see what would happen. And Arthur and Olive Matthews were coming to dinner that Sunday. And they cancelled the dinner, which I would view as a prejudging of me. But Yvonne, my wife, pleaded with him to come and talk, at least talk. So he came that night and he was here for 5 1/4 hours in my study. And I told him the whole story about what happened in the United States, about the lies the society are publishing. They know it. They know we have documented evidence of it. They're calling people animals and sex fiends and all sorts of unpleasant names. In fact, in next year's yearbook, which I have in my possession, over 20 times from the letter of Jude, over 20 times from April 1st to the end of the year, shocking names are called to people who have left or disassociated themselves or have tried to make the brothers see that not all is well up in the headquarters. You'll notice that yourself if you get a copy of it. So what happened was a circuit overseer came in, Ewan Watt, on a Tuesday night at a meeting, and he asked to meet with me. I met with him in a local cafe. We had a cup of coffee too, in fact, and he said to me that there was a lot of people hurt and upset over things that I had said to them. And I said, well, I've only been speaking to my personal friends, and maybe they've spoken to one or two, but I swore people to secrecy because I knew that this was dynamite. So I said, well, he wanted me to meet with four judges, four brothers, especially called in, the very next night. I said, well, that's very rather premature. I said, I'd like you to read the documentation in my possession. He said, documents make no difference. He said, it doesn't matter what's right or wrong, true or false in this issue. What matters is John May talking. That's the essence of what he said. So I put the meeting off till that Friday to give myself time to think. It was all happening so quick. So he asked to speak to Martin Merriman, which he did in the car. So after about half an hour of talking with Martin, I got Martin out of the car. I said, Martin, he's not interested in what's true or false, right or wrong. He won't read the documents. And he said to me, they're probably forged. I said, look, they're on the society's own letterheads. They can be easily verified. But he wouldn't listen. And Martin said, he said the same to me, or words similar. I said, do you want to resign tonight? He said, no, I'm going to fight from within. So my wife and I resigned. We had a letter of resignation announced that night. And just by a coincidence, Peter Doyle is a personal friend of mine. He resigned as an elder that night as well, because it was getting too much for him. And another friend of mine, Lark Gaffney, he resigned as a brother that night because of all this. And he detested the hypocrisy that was taking place. But he since took it back, and he's fighting from within. But that night he brought me back in front of an elder and shook my hand. He said, look, there's the evidence, and I'm going to continue to shake John May's hand. So that night there was uproar, as you can imagine, in the congregation, because nobody suspected anything. And my wife, of course, was upset. But 21 brothers and sisters, we all met with us that night, and we ate and drank. And that'll give you the idea, some idea of how the Irish will not accept dictatorial commands from foreign lands, possibly because of the history of the Irish, having suffered for 800 years and being told by the British, the English, what to do and how to do it and who to say hello to and all the rest of it. So the Irish people are much more friendly people, apparently. Now, they are really in their hearts. They're much more natural. They're not as reserved. They're like the Spanish. They're very outgoing. So we resigned on the 28th of September. And Martin Merriman had already resigned as a servant 3 months prior to that. Well, there was uproar, as you can imagine. Martin then met the following Saturday and took 20 witnesses with him. 20 witnesses. And every one of them denied that he was an apostate. And he was exonerated, and there was 3 talks given which cleared Martin Merriman and tried to put a stamp on the talk of apostasy. But a few weeks later, Martin and Liz resigned because they felt how the cold ones were ignoring them, etc. But they were going to resign anyway, and that's the night before they flew back to America. Not that Ray Franz has anything to offer us. He's just a Christian. Not that I have anything to offer our group or Martin. We're just Christians, and we're just happy to serve our brothers. So then Jared, my brother, has resigned. John Maxwell has resigned. And we heard Evelyn Gallagher resigned last week. Today is the 8th of December. A brother came in. He and his wife are refusing to go to any more meetings. My own brother Derek and his wife have not gone to any more meetings. We had 32 at our little group last week. And there are other resignations in the wind. Well, for a small country, this is devastating. My own postman came this morning, and I couldn't tell you what he said, what he thinks about that September 15th watchtower. Because he works with people he knows people who are Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a small community, you see, and everybody knows everybody. And I met a lady yesterday, and she said that, John, I'm going to say something that's going to hurt you. And I said, go ahead, I don't mind. She said, I think Jehovah's Witnesses are worse than the Roman Catholic Church in this area of hurting people. I says, well, it shouldn't have happened. It was beautiful, but it's tragic. And it's simply that they've gone beyond the things that are written. So we have a little group now, and last Wednesday we had 32 in attendance. We had a Baptist minister here, we had a Roman Catholic priest here, and they've had difficulties with their movements. I myself, because of the articles I've written in newspapers and some radio and TV publicity, have possibly been the most well-known witness in Ireland, and I'm getting letters and phone calls from all over the country. I'll give it a typical illustration. A brother and sister have invited us to a meal in the country just the other day, and over 150 Irish brothers and sisters reject that watchtower. And the two elders came to a brother last Tuesday night, Terry Mulvaney, and said to him that was it true he'd had a meal with me this week? He said no, and they said last week, and he said no. And they tried to say, what was he talking about? Well, the Irish people won't have that FBI carry on. To them, that's an inquisition. And he was carrying his letter of resignation as a ministerial servant on him. And he said, there's my letter of resignation. And you men are crazy if you think, and you, the other elders are crazy, if you think that I am going to walk straight past my personal friends when I know they're not wicked. And you know they're not wicked. So it's crazy, this whole thing. And may I say that that is the average reaction of the average witness. It is crazy to think that they can split families. The Irish are a very family-oriented people, very close. They may have arguments and differences, but they love each other. Although there is this awful trouble in Northern Ireland, I acknowledge, which is shocking. But I'm speaking now about the Republic of Ireland, where 95% are Roman Catholics. And it's a very small, very close-knit community. So 32 are here last Wednesday. I don't know how many will be here tonight. We have ads in the newspapers. I've written to over 20 hospitals and have 20 more hospitals to write to. We're hoping to visit sick children and neglected children in hospitals. We're helping an organization, I think it's called Concern, tonight, and our little group is going to donate £10, and that will help 500 children from going blind. And if it's £20, we'll save 1,000 children from going blind. So our group, we're going to donate that tonight. So to me, that's real Christian service. So I can't wait to tell the little family Christian community that tonight. We're holding a miniature convention, our assembly, this January 2nd, and we're going to publicly advertise it in all the newspapers. We're calling a press conference in January sometime. We're having a party for the children in January, and all the local family heads are holding our first meeting this Sunday to discuss our community, to discuss the assembly. We've had our first leaflets printed today, which reminds me, I won't post this letter to you till I get the leaflets. I'm getting them at 3 o'clock this afternoon. It's 2:15 now. So I'll send you the leaflets. And so it's very exciting. I'll tell you what I'm particularly enjoying, Jim, because I just realised I haven't mentioned your name yet, Jim Penton. Jim, what I'm really enjoying is the freedom to speak my mind, to speak my heart. The actual freedom to say to a question, well, I don't know. Well, I don't see it that way. Well, that's your point of view, and I think your point of view is fascinating. And to allow for each other's point of view. And that's what we're promoting. So my brother Jared has resigned, and he is fairly wealthy. He's supporting our group in every way. I'm doing okay in business, and so it's not causing us any financial difficulty. We're doing very well. If you could send another subscription over, I'll give you the address in the letter. I'll leave that for the letter. So many, many brothers and sisters are calling day and night almost to my home, ringing, calling, writing, to express their support. A Catholic lady rang the other day from Tipperary while one of the elders was here collecting some documents, and said she admired and respected our courage in this. So my wife was reared as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and it's been an eye-opener for her to see the coldness, to see the shallowness, to see the lack of kindness when you question or challenge the leadership. I loved and respected them. But as my friend in England, Jeff Gerling, as he said, that when I asked him in England this year, he said the society were hysterical for loyalty at the moment. And that's before I told him anything. He has since read the documents, and he said he's going to take a stand against them. If he's to fellowship, he doesn't care. He's quite a student of Christian history. He's going to the university in England, in Nottingham at the moment. And so we have friends all over the country who are reading the documents, who are thinking, who are watching what's happening here. So on the 2nd of January, in the Lord Mayor's residence in the Mansion House in Dublin, we're holding our convention. If you were thinking of sending a telegram, we'll be sending your group one. You wouldn't get it to the Mansion House because everything would be closed down then. If you were thinking of sending a telegram or anything like that, send it to my home. Well in advance, due to the Christmas rush, that would be nice for the brothers to know that we have brothers in Canada and America who are in harmony and in unity with us. I think it's true what you said to me on the phone one day, Jim, that it's difficult for the average brother to conceive of serving God individually, as an individual. They seem to need structure. But I haven't written one thing yet as a charter. My charter is God's word. My mandate are the teachings of Jesus. The purpose is the promotion of Christian teachings and love and kindness. If I do write anything, it will be very simple and very loose. And I will leave all the judging to God, all the questions in His hand. He can answer them far better than I can. So I'm coming towards the end of the tape. I've spoken for much longer than I intended to. I would say to you brothers and sisters over there, don't be afraid. Serve Jehovah with all your hearts. If some start believing the Trinity, well, allow for that. Many godly men have believed the Trinity down through human history. I like what one of the Roman emperors once said, if God is offended, well, he can handle it. Well, he actually said, if the gods are offended, they can handle it. Let them handle it. But Jehovah isn't offended at men's innocence or ignorance. He understands our backgrounds, our sociological conditioning, our psychological conditioning, our educational standard. He can grasp all that and allow for all that. And that's why I feel great love for people. And if we can as humans, how much more so our loving Father in heaven. And in my prayers, I've been much closer. I've been speaking to Jesus. In fact, I did ignore him over the years, but I have been speaking to him much more since. And I find that great. I find that in Ireland now there's a great deal of interest in the Bible. And Jehovah's Witnesses are capitalizing on that, as are the Mormons and the Way and other groups. And it doesn't bother me anymore. We will express Christianity in our community as we understand it. And I think if we can express the Spirit each week, each day, that's what it's all about. We don't have all the answers. I feel very sorry for Jehovah's Witnesses as an organization. I wrote to Jack Barr last week, and I wrote, as you Americans say, I shot from the hip. I spoke straight to him. I sent him the cutting. He came here. There were 500 people met in a hotel in Dunleary, and I was the only one that was disassociated that night. It was disgraceful. He never really answered one of the questions. Bob Pevy came from Brooklyn with him, who's a nice man himself. In fact, he said hello to me that night. But over 50 people said hello to me that evening at the meeting. That'll give you some idea of the Irish brothers and sisters. Now, many didn't. I freely acknowledge that. But it didn't bother me because I was with real friends. And when Fred Metcalf stood up there and asked for a clap to a demonstration of loyalty for the governing body, over 30 people refused to clap, but there was 12 in my row and not one of us clapped. Now remember, I was the only one disassociated at that time. I didn't want my wife to come that night to experience this. It's vicious cruelty. That's all I can call it. What I think it is. But I'll never retaliate. I'll never become a Watchtower basher. The Watchtower Society has a fine purpose, a fine charter, written by a fine man, Charles Taze Russell. It has become a parody. It has become a religion of rules and regulations. The joy is gone. Although I must admit, I was very joyful as one of Jehovah's Witnesses because I was serving God as a Christian among Jehovah's Witnesses. So anyway, as I said, I've said enough. What else can I say? Give you a little background to the witnesses over here. They're in the country about a bit over maybe 70 or 80 years. Charles Taze Russell came here about 1910. The work really only got going here after the Second World War in the Republic, and it's been very, very slow. Very few Catholics have converted. But with international press, television, Ireland itself, the clergy in Ireland are losing their grip on the people. And even we are benefiting, our group, because someone rang yesterday, saw one of the ads, and they're coming tonight. So things are going very well. Each day to me is a joy as a Christian. Each day is a challenge. Something new, something unusual, something different happens every day. And I don't have to keep thinking now, am I being loyal to the organization? Is it pleasing to the organization? Or I don't have to worry about the spies who ring up and were reporting me behind my back for little things I might say or do in full innocence. And I just always felt we should be honest about our feelings and about how we felt. Anyway, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Jehovah bless you. There's a little bit left on the tape. If I think of anything else, I'll put it on. I'll conclude with Jesus' statement, if you remain in my word, emphasis, my word, you shall really know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Jehovah bless you all. Bye-bye.